Thank you so much. And welcome back, everyone. However, that time was spent. Again, I hope there was some nurturance and some ease, even when sometimes it can be difficult, right? So welcome back. And as I said before, we'll just move right into the sit. So I want to invite each of us to allow the body to come into a posture that allows us to feel upright and alert. And it doesn't matter whether you're sitting or lying down, this is more of an energetic alertness, and availability to yourself, to the practice. Again, letting go of whatever it's possible to let go of, such that there can be some ease in the body. Feel yourself, feel the sit bones again, whatever you're sitting upon, feel that which is supporting you. Yeah, the chair, the cushion, the couch, the bed, the floor, more fundamentally, the earth. Allow yourself to take your place of connection with the earth beneath us and the heaven above us. Almost like clicking in to both energies. And for our sit this morning, this afternoon, depending on where you are, I'd like us to play in the realm of the mind, but first, really locating ourselves in our body. So, again, feeling perhaps our feet on the floor. So I like to sometimes put a little pressure on the balls of my feet, just as a way of, again, connecting in the earth, letting my attention rest there because it will help bring the attention out of the mind. So, the invitation is really first, again, locating ourselves in the body, having a felt sense of the physical form that the sit bones are resting upon, our bones, the earth element resting upon earth element. And then turning our attention towards noticing the qualities, the energy, and what's happening with the thinking mind. From this vantage point of, oh, this is like a science experiment. I'm just going to see, I'm going to observe. Maybe anthropological might be a better word of just noticing the speed of the thoughts, the tone, the quality, the cadence. Really bringing a sense of curiosity to what's going on here in the mind. Again, from this amazing vantage point of just noticing. Inevitably, some of the thoughts will be compelling enough, seductive enough, upsetting enough to kind of pull us in. So that expression sort of ride that thought train. And then at some point, the memory might come like, oh, wait, can I come back to just observing? On one of my earlier retreats, John Travis had said, when we come, we take our seat and we watch the theater of our mind. And that has always stayed with me, this capacity. We take our seat and we can just watch what's going on in this mind of ours. From a place, ideally, like sort of a relaxed, gentle, curious observer. Sometimes there might be a lot going on. Okay, we notice that without the need to fix it, without wishing it were otherwise, without trying to corral the mind into something else, but being able to stay in that observer place of, huh, there's a lot happening, or, oh, it's really quiet. So being able, we're strengthening our capacity just to watch, oh, this is what's happening in the thinking mind. It can sometimes help to label, planning, judging, comparing, if that's helpful. And really allowing those moments when we catch ourselves, like, oh, wow, I got lost in that thought. And how great that we woke up from it. Oh, cool. Okay. Can I come back to that theater seat, as it were, just to watch? And this is the exercising the muscle of mindfulness, or really of awakening. Those moments are like, oh, wait, I was lost in thought. And now can I just come back, feel myself sitting here, sit bones, feet on the earth, and sort of again resume that theater seat of watching the movement of the mind, the cadence, the thoughts, the energy. Yeah, can we just stay really curious to what's going on with a thinking mind? Really letting the judge sit down. Yeah, we're just staying curious. Oh, it's like this in this moment. Oh, and now it's like this. Yeah. So have fun. Please remember there's no such thing as a bad sit. We come, we take our seats, we see how it is. Thanks for being with us, practicing together. Thank you. Thanks so much, Dana, for ringing the bell. And I hope, however that sit went, I'm just so glad, really, that we get to sit together. And I'm very aware sometimes the sits are like, oh, so nice. Sometimes it's like, oh my, when is the bell going to ring? Right? Sometimes it's a mixture of all those things. And that's just how it is. Right? And just, again, sort of extending this generosity towards ourselves of, okay, that's how that sit was. So today together, I wanted to play in the realm of working with thoughts and sort of finding our own truth. And sort of, part of this is born out of, I'm almost through Gabor Mate's book, The Myth of Normal, which is great, definitely a tomb of a book. But in one of his chapters, he talks about the truth, and the truth of how things actually happen to be at this moment. This is the kind of truth that ushers in healing, when we're really able to see, oh, it's just like this in this moment. And that level of clarity is unobscured by whether we want to speak in sort of Buddhist psychology terms of the hindrances of that which we want to grasp, that's what we're pushing away. The restlessness of the mind or in the body, the sleepiness, sloth, the torpor in the mind and in the body, or doubt. Those are mechanisms that can come in to cloud that clarity, as can our conditioning, the messages we got from our parents, our siblings, our families, schools, the communities we grew up in. All kinds of messages come towards us that can shape the way we think and can cloud our ability to see that which is clear. Many of us, when we were young, may not have been supported in our views, that sense of what we might have given voice to as a kid. So many of us might have been told to be quiet, or no, that's not true, or you know, you can't get angry, or all the different conditionings that we might have had from our parents, however well-meaning they might have been, that can kind of close parts of us down. And in that closure, we lose access to the fullness of ourselves, right? Oh, well, I can't speak up for whatever reason, whether it was sort of punitive fear of when we were young, or just that part wasn't included in, or what we might have been told in schools, the ways through our lives, we've shut down part of ourselves to kind of accommodate being in the world. One of the main threads of Gabor Mate's book is we live in a world that's so unsustainable. It takes so much effort to try and be healthy in this world because conditions are not really supporting the natural way that this human organism was organized to be through the course of evolution. He continues to write, the intellect becomes a far greater tool when it allows the heart to speak, when it opens itself to that within us that resonates with truth rather than trying to reason with it. And I love this notion of how can we resonate, what paying attention to what we resonate with, what's true, as opposed to when the mind is like, well, I don't know if this makes sense. And sort of the inner lawyer can kind of come in and make an argument one way or the other. And being able to see our minds as potentially often inherently unreliable. Right, the notion of within each of us is an inner committee. And as I've spoken of before, some of those committee members really are not reliable, either because they're born out of when we were young, in the sense that sort of a six-year-old part of ourselves is still there, can sometimes rule the roost and is not necessarily that, doesn't have the maturity, isn't the wisest voice that can lead us around. Right? But it takes effort to slow down enough to really look at, okay, what are the patterns of the mind, who are those committee members, if that's a helpful way to look at what we do. And when I spoke before of parts that can get shut down, the wisdom of the heart, you know, sometimes we need to protect ourselves. So we protect ourselves by protecting the heart, but then we lose access. Yeah. And in this, the notion that the mind, the intellect's wisdom, the heart's own wisdom, and the gut. The heart knows things. This is from his book. The heart knows things just as surely as a gut feeling is also a kind of knowing. We speak of three brains meant to function in concert with an autonomic nervous system connecting with them all. Without the heart and the gut knowledge, we often function as a genius level reptile. which I think is a great phrasing. And these invitation to really look at if we can open up to the wholeness of our experience, of our own internal experience. I spoke of this some last week. We have much more access to our own truth of really understanding who we are when we step out from under who we've sort of been told to be, whether lovingly or not. Yeah. From the Dhammapada, mind is a forerunner of all actions. All deeds are led by mind, created by mind. If one speaks or acts with corrupt mind, suffering follows, as the wheel follows the hoof of an ox pulling a cart. Mind is the forerunner of all actions. All deeds are led by mind, created by mind. If one speaks or acts with a serene mind, happiness follows, as surely as one's shadow. He abused me, he mistreated me, defeated me, robbed me. Harboring such thoughts keeps hatred alive. He abused me, mistreated me, defeated me, robbed me. Releasing such thoughts banishes hatred for all time. Anonymity does not eradicate animosity does not eradicate animosity. Only by loving kindness is animosity dissolved. This is the ancient and eternal law. Right, another phrasing. Hatred never saves hatred. Only through love alone may that be healed. Right, it's through this connection to the heart, that loving kindness that can help work and soften the mind. In working with the harms that we afflict on others that are afflicted on us, the process of touch, being connected to the heart to understand what are the harms, moving through a forgiveness process that can be so liberating. Yeah, so there are steps that need to be taken, of course, but with this arcing goal to how do we stay connected to the wisdom in the gut, the wisdom in the heart, and the wisdom of the mind, and really understanding the mind is not always reliable. Yeah, and the freedom that can come from that place. This is a poem by Jeff Foster called Shattered. Sometimes you don't get to be a Buddha. Sometimes you just have to break and feel. You have to lose your precious spiritual awakening. You just have to be a human being, feeling. Sometimes old pain resurfaces, old fear, sorrow, trauma, the searing ache of the abandoned child, the rage of a forgotten universe. And suddenly all of your spiritual insights crumble. All the beautiful spiritual words by the beautiful spiritual teachers, all the concepts and ideas about awakening and enlightenment, and the pure perfection of pure untainted awareness, and the selflessness, non-self-self, and the path to glorious futures, the wise guru, they suddenly are all meaningless, empty words, secondhand drivel, and dead to you. What's real now and alive is the burning in the belly, the fire in the heart, unavoidable, intense, so close, so present. Sometimes you just have to feel. You have no choice. And sense your feet on the ground, breathe into the discomfort and trust, and maybe trust that you cannot trust right now. And take it moment by moment by moment by moment, and know that nothing is working against you. And awaken from your dream of how this moment should be, and throw away all your secondhand ideas about the path. Sometimes your spirituality has to shatter so you can finally realize this deeper spirituality of feeling, presence, feet on the ground, living, and the source of the birds singing in the distance, and a total surrender to this one precious moment. And I love this poem. It's really challenging our notions of, we want to have all these ideas and have it work. Like, well, I learned this and I've been practicing this. And then when things shatter us, whether it's very serious health issues or death, divorce, the many ways things don't go the way we want them to go, that understandable break that happens where there can be kind of a rebirth of these constructs I had, these beliefs I had, may not sustain us. Okay, so then what does if we allow the crack to happen? You know, Leonard Cohen's, that's where the light comes in. It happens. This is what happens in our lives. And then there's could be a rebirth and a dropping down a level into what's true. What am I actually feeling? The heartache, the grief, the rage. Okay, what's here? Having enough space to move through those feelings. And sometimes we need help. A guide to help us navigate those challenging parts, traumas, whether they're little T or capital T, but enough to be able to keep turning towards, and titrated when helpful, turning towards the truth of our experience that others may have denied or said, no, that never happened, or you don't have it right. And again, where we can lean into the parami, to the perfection of the heart of wisdom, that can help us understand what's what in terms of the voices in the mind. And in the Dhammapada reading, the mind proceeds so much. There's the question of like, well, which part of the mind? Right. And where we can, if we allow ourselves to get still enough and check into what feels true, that gut feeling, that sense when we can allow the body, the heart and the gut to be involved in the conversation as we're trying to navigate what's actually true, it's more trustworthy, right? That's where wisdom can come. Joseph Goldstein's line about the mind can be a lot about knowledge and information, but wisdom is sort of the whole package. And this is me speaking, not Joseph, but that there's a congruence of the heart, the gut, and the mind of like, okay, this is what's reliable. This is dependable. Another poem by Marie Howe called Singularity. Do you sometimes want to wake up to the singularity we once were? So compact, nobody needed a bed or food or money. Nobody hiding in the school bathroom or home alone, pulling open the drawer where the pills are kept. For every atom belonging to me as good belongs to you, remember? There was no nature, no them, no tests to determine if the elephant grieves her calf or if the coral reefs feel pain. Trashed oceans don't speak English or Farsi or French. That we would wake up to what we were when we were the ocean. And before that, to when the sky was earth, and animal was energy, and rock was liquid, and stars were space, and space was not at all, nothing. Before we came to believe humans were so important, before this awful loneliness, can molecules recall it? What once was, before anything happened? No I, no we, no one. No was no verb, no noun, only a tiny dot brimming with is, all, everything, home. And this movement from is sort of dedicated to, or the tag was sort of after Stephen Hawking, but sort of the going to the Big Bang sense of our being when there really was no separation, that some part of us still is connected to that idea that we're all stardust. We're all made of the elements of the earth. We're all made of stardust. And how the mind has conditioned us through need of survival when it was useful and maybe not such useful ways to condition into us and them and know and that and parts of ourselves that are okay and parts of ourselves that are not. The separations, the fracturing, shattering that can happen. Sometimes it happens because of the course of events of our lives. And sometimes that shattering or fracturing can happen because of the way the mind works that had sort of, again, strategies born out of necessity when we were young. And through the mindfulness practice of really looking at what's going on in the mind, what are these different voices? What am I being guided by? What's reliable? We bring in the mind, we bring in the body, we bring in the heart to be able to kind of check in. Oh, this. One more point. Called Remember by Bridget Anna McNeil. Remember who you are, not the shape others have put on you, not the story they handed you, not the lies or the needs that were pressed into your psyche, not even your own imagined ideas of what you should be, but the real you, the wild innate you that is breathing under all those should-be's, all those untruths. Remember the feel of it, the shape of it. Let it inhabit you like golden weeds rewilding the concrete. So I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. And just for a moment, just come back into yourself, feeling yourself sitting or lying down. checking in with how the body is, the gut, the heart. And this invitation to remember who you are, not the shape others have put on you, not the story they handed you, nor the story you've told yourself about yourself. The real you, the wild innate you. If you open yourself up to this invitation to remember what comes, stepping out of fear thinking, to borrow from Rumi, stepping out of the stories told about you, again, the stories you've told yourself, stepping back into feeling the earth element, the bones, the water element, the flow of this organism, the wind element, the breath, the spaciousness that is alive in this body, the element of fire, of heat. Can you connect into the real you, the wild innate you that is breathing under all the should-be's, all the untruths? Can you remember who you are by touching into your heart, the qualities you hold most dear, of love and compassion, truthfulness, patience, laughter, delight, joy, wisdom, patience, equanimity, you name it, whatever it is, those qualities you hold most dear in the heart. Can you let yourself remember and relax back into this innate goodness when the mind is steady or quiet, the heart is open, the connection to our life force, the vitality, a sense of congruence, and honoring the voices of the gut and the heart and the mind. This innate wild you that is unified and congruent, remember this. And notice, how does this feel? How might it feel to move in the world from this place? A place out from under the should-be's, what we should have done with our lives, what we have done that we wish we hadn't, the regrets, the untruths we tell about ourselves, the untruths from others we may have accepted to be true. How does it feel in the body? In the jaw, in the shoulders, in the belly, in the back body, when we allow ourselves to step out from under the stories. Byron Katie's great questions of, is it true? Is it really true? How do you know it's true? What if it wasn't true? Releasing ourselves from these layers, these obscurations, these distortions, these untruths, to feel into again the sense of the open heart, that radiates with these qualities you hold dear. Lingering here, perhaps a moment more, to what actually are those qualities that guide the heart, that the heart takes refuge in. The qualities that resonate with your very being. What helps soothe the fire in the belly? what brings calm to that agitation that can live in the gut. There's a sense of spaciousness, a sense of coolness, a sense of being heard and listened to. When we listen to that gut sense that says, maybe not. Again, these pointings towards aligning with a sense of congruence with our very being. How does it feel to move from that place? How would it feel to meet your life from this place? So I'm going to stop there and thank you for your kind attention, and would love to open the time up. We have lots of time to hear from each other. And again, sometimes we have our group, there are a lot of folks that want to speak, and sometimes.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.